This is the Bigger Pockets Podcast, show 42.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
What's going on, everybody? This is Josh Dorkin, host of the Bigger Pockets Podcast, here with my jolly old partner in crime, Brandon Turner. Hey, Brandon.
You make me sound like Santa Claus on a rampage. Do you remember that old Weird Al song? It was The Night Santa Went Crazy.
I don't, but I remember
The
Eat It.
Night Santa Went Crazy. Anyway.
Yeah, I don't know.
I made a music video in high school to it. It was awesome.
Is it on YouTube?
No, but I should put it on there. I do have the VHS.
Oh, you have to.
I got to find a way to do that.
There are lots of people who would click on your video.
It was pretty great. I'll have to
look
for
that. And then point fingers at you and laugh.
Yeah, it would go viral. That's how good it was.
Nice, nice. So things are good?
Things are great. Things are great.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. That's awesome. Well, we've got a cool show ahead today. Pretty excited about it.
Yes, me too. When we recorded it a couple of days ago and I learned like 1,000 things in this episode, so I'm excited for everyone else to get to learn those too.
Absolutely, absolutely. Before we do, this is show 42 on the Bigger Pockets Podcast. You can check out our show notes at biggerpockets.com/show42. And let's just dive in. Today we're going to have as a guest a nice guy named Mike Nelson. Mike lives and wholesales houses in the Richmond, Virginia area. He's the co-founder of Smith & Nelson Properties, LLC, a company that manages real estate in D.C., Maryland, and the Virginia tri-state area. It's interesting. New York, New Jersey, Connecticut was the tri-state area when I grew up. I guess there's all sorts of tri-state areas around the country. I didn't even think about that.
Washington, Oregon, Idaho, the tri-state.
Oh, really?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, yeah, so Mike blogs at his site, wholesalinghouses101.com, and he's an active poster on the Bigger Pockets forum. Today, this show, guys, it's really chock full of some great tips for getting started and finding success as a wholesaler. If you have not yet done any wholesaling, this is definitely going to be a great show for you to pay attention to. Yep. Of course, make sure to come and ask Mike any questions you have on the show notes, again, at biggerpockets.com/show42, and you'll be able to find links to all the useful stuff that we talked about. So without further ado, I'm going to give a quick plug to giving us some feedback on the iTunes system. Leave us a rating and review there. We love those. They help us get more visibility for the show. We're now exceeding 14,000 listens per podcast. So Ooh. The show continues to grow. It's awesome. It's awesome. So
remember when you had to pay to get a lead's phone number? It was like the dark ages until Deal Machine made skip tracing a thing of the past. Now, with your Deal Machine plan, you'll get unlimited access to phone numbers and contact information for no extra cost. That's right. Get high-quality, reliable information trusted by leading financial institutions, all fully compliant with the federal Do Not Call list. Explore over 150 data points, including age, gender, marital status, occupation, and a ton more. Trust me, this is the data you need for off-market deals. With new filters, people flags, and color-coded phone numbers, lead management just got a ton easier. Ready to step up your investing game? Sign up for a Deal Machine plan today and gain immediate access to this unlimited treasure trove of contact information and phone numbers. Just head to dealmachine.com/BP. Transform your lead generation and deal-making strategies with Deal Machine. Sign up today and start exploring the unlimited possibilities at dealmachine.com/BP.
Passive income without the property headache? It's possible. There's a way to invest passively in real estate and get monthly income without any tenants, maintenance, or property management. The Wealthy have been doing this for years, and if you're an accredited or high net worth investor, you too can collect cash flow without the headaches that come from owning rentals. How? By investing in a private real estate fund with PPR Capital Management. PPR's co-founder, Dave Van Horn, wrote the book on real estate note investing for BP. But he's not just investing in notes. Dave and his team also have an extensive background in commercial real estate. And with PPR Capital Management, they're strategically investing in both notes and commercial real estate nationwide. With over $500 million in assets under management, PPR has provided individuals with a steady source of truly passive income since 2007 without ever missing a payment. Check them out at investwithppr.com. Again, if you're looking to get monthly passive income from an experienced team with a strong track record, go to investwithppr.com today. You might think you want real estate, but that's not true. What you really want is passive income. With new investors struggling to find deals or get enough money to buy them and veteran landlords tired of the constant tenant phone calls, is there a better alternative? Actually, there is. Short notes from ConnectInvest. ConnectInvest is an online investing platform that allows you to easily participate in passive real estate investing, and all you need is $500 to start. Short notes collectively funds a diversified portfolio of commercial and residential real estate projects across acquisition, construction, and development phases. You'll earn a fixed monthly income without the hassle of owning or managing real estate. Head to connectinvest.com/BP to create your account. Fund your digital wallet with at least $500. Select from 6, 12, and 24-month short notes with annualized return rates up to 9%. Then sit back and let your monthly returns roll in. Join today by visiting connectinvest.com/VP. connectinvest.com/VP.
Anyway, let's get this guy in on the action. Mike, how are you? Welcome to the show. Good to have you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're glad to have you. Let's do this. Let's go into it. Why don't we start at the very beginning? How did you get started? Like, what's your pre-investing era look like?
Well, the way that I got started in real estate was pretty much reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad. A good friend of mine, he told me, I graduated college in 2009. We were roommates. And he told me once we started work, and he was like, you know, this is not for us. We can't do it. I said, you know what? I feel the same way. He said, I want you to read this book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And after reading that book, I called him back. I said, we have to get started in the real estate. We have to get into this assignment of contracts, wholesaling. So we went out there and did a little bit more research, did some research on it, and actually got out there and got our first property under contract. To make a long story short, what happened after that is we lost $2,000 because we didn't know what to do.
Ooh.
And I like to tell people that was an expensive education right there, you know, because what happened was we lost that money to the seller. He took it. He ran away with it, forced to, you know, he told us he was going to sue us. You know, it's just a bad situation. So after that, we went out there and did some more research and tried to learn about wholesaling and assignments of contract. And that led us to where we're at right now.
Okay, I got to dig in a little bit. $2,000, you know, not inconsequential. How did that go down so that folks listening don't pull off the same mistake that you happened to fall into when you did this deal?
All right. First off, the deal was a great deal. The seller ended up selling the property, and the person who you know, rehabbed it and renovated it, they ended up making over $150,000. So we was set to make around $22,000 on the property. And, you know, we didn't know a lot, but we knew that this was a good deal. We got the property under contract, and the seller, he told us that he wanted to get the earnest money deposit through PayPal. Okay. He didn't want us to send it to an escrow, you know, to a title company. He said, I want to make sure that you're serious. He knew that it was a good deal. Come to find out later, what happened was they were going to foreclose, or they was going to sell his mother's property at tax auction. You know, it's a story behind that, but he didn't want to deal with our title company. So we sent him the money through PayPal, and then what ended up happening was he gave us the contract. He didn't like our title company, and he said, I'm not going to settlement. We had a buyer lined up and everything, and we was about to go to you know, closing. He said, I don't like this guy. Let's switch title companies, and he left with our money.
Wow. So, but you said now that he was talking about trying to sue you. Seems it might be the other way around here with this guy running off with your money.
Well, the story is what happened was he didn't get along with the guy at the title company because the property was his mother's, and he was trying to get paid off of selling the property, and the the guy at the title company, he said, you know, this doesn't seem right. You know, I don't like what's going on. And being that he would not let him go through with the transaction, the guy, he said, I want to go deal with somebody that's going to let me do this and get paid off of it. So, you know, being that we didn't do that and we used our buyer's title company, the guy at the title company told us, he said, I will not let the buyer buy this property if you go to a different title company. And we had it locked up. The contract was getting ready to end. We wanted to see it close. So I tried to work it out. It didn't work out. He said that he was going to sue us for breach of contract because we didn't want to change title companies. And the guy at the title company who was getting ready to close on it, it was his fault. So, you know, he claimed that he was a lawyer. We didn't know what we was doing. We didn't have an LLC. We didn't know anything. We were scared. So It just worked out that way. We lost the money.
Sounds like an all around cluster.
It was.
Wow. All right. So this didn't work out well. Do we go and give people $2,000 from PayPal up front, or do we stop doing that?
Never.
Okay. I'm just making sure because, you know, we got people listening. You know, when do we pay our people? We pay them
You pay them in escrow.
There you go.
You put the money in escrow with a title company or a closing attorney. Never pay them through PayPal.
Oh my goodness! Well, that definitely was a mistake. But you know what? It's you live and learn, and that's hopefully nobody listening ever tries to pull this off and do that because we all make some kind of mistake, and hopefully that was the one for your career.
Yes.
So what did you do after that then? You said you went and got more education, you know, like you learned more. I mean, did you make money on the next project?
Basically hanging out on Bigger Pockets. Bigger Pockets was a big part of, you know, me and I tell you about my partner who told me to read the book Rich Dad Poor Dad. We ended up starting an LLC and going out there and flipping properties together. But reading up on Bigger Pockets has taught me a lot. And the way I actually got into it and got my first deal was that my grandmother was trying to sell her property in Philadelphia. And when she was trying to sell her property, what I did was I went out there and tried to find the cash buyers in the area. So I sent them postcards. After I sent them postcards, I lucked up by finding another wholesaler by a mistake. So I'm in Virginia. My grandmother's property was in Philadelphia, and I tried to sell her property. So I went out there, found cash buyers. A gentleman, he owned a rental property. I sent him the postcard. Well, he wasn't interested in selling, but he knew that his grandson was a wholesaler. He knew what he did, so he sent him my postcard. And at the time, I got a phone call. He left a voicemail message, and he told me, he said, hey, you know, I'm an investor. I'm wholesaling. I do about 50 deals a year. You know, I would like to, you know, do business with you. It seems like, you know, you're doing your thing, and you're all the way in Virginia, and you're sending out these postcards. Little did he know, I haven't even had my first deal yet. But me and him partnered up, and on that same mailing, I ended up getting a call from a gentleman who just recently bought a property. He said, I'm looking for properties in the area. If you have any, come my way. So what I did was I partnered up with the gentleman, the other wholesaler, and I sent off postcards to properties around that area. And that's how it all got started. That's how I ended up getting my first deal, was nice. Partnering up with that gentleman and just sending off postcards.
Now, did you ever end up getting somebody to buy your grandma's house or?
Yeah, we ended up selling that. Okay. We made a little profit on it. We found a buyer. The gentleman who I found through that postcard, who was a wholesaler, he actually found a buyer for that property.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And hopefully she didn't sell it at too much of a discount to shark-infested investors.
No, she was happy. She got out. You know, she was happy.
Yeah, that's great. That's awesome. So, how did that partnership, is that the same partner you have right now, or is that a different guy in the partner you worked with?
No, this is a different gentleman. Me and him, we're still on good terms. He actually, he exploded after me and him started working together, and he actually went a different direction, but still in real estate. You know, he went to a different market. So yeah, I have different partners who I work with now, but they all do the same exact thing that he would be doing for me.
Can you tell us a little bit about that partnership? And just into, you know, I don't care about the name or anything, but I'm just talking about details. How did you guys work together? You know, was it like a 50-50? What did the structure of the partnership look like?
Okay. First off, it was a 50-50. You know, everything we did, we split it down the middle 50-50. The way that I brought something to the table and when what he brought to the table is when I first started with him, I didn't know a lot. You know, I just came off that deal losing $2,000. And the way I got started with him was is I'll get these people calling me after I sent off the postcards. I didn't really know the market. I didn't have MLS access. So what I did was I sent the properties over to him and I say, hey, what do you think? And then what he'll do is he'll say, you know what, we'll probably, if we can get it at this price, we can probably flip it. It'll be a good deal. And that led to all the deals that came in. I'll send them over to him in an email and he'll tell me, he'll say, hey, this is what we can offer. We'll call the seller back, offer it, set the appointment up with him. And then he'll go out there, take a look at it, get it under property. I mean, get it under contract, and we'll put both of our names on the contract. And then he'll find a buyer, and we'll close on it and make 50% of the assignment fee.
Okay, cool. And so, just for clarification, I just want to make sure. Some people, when you say flipping, you're referring to like flipping contracts, correct?
Yes, flipping wholesaling contracts.
Yeah, because I know some people say flip and some people say wholesale. And so, those listening, I want to make sure that we're. Everyone's on the same page that you're talking about wholesaling, like, yeah, or flipping contracts. So, okay, cool.
Yeah.
So why did you choose wholesaling? You know, after you read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, what made you think, oh, I want to be a wholesaler instead of I want to be a house flipper or a, you know, buy and hold investor? How'd that decision come along?
When I first got started, it seemed complex, but out of everything, investment properties, actually going out there renovating properties, this seemed like it was the easiest way to get into real estate investing. So that's how I came upon the wholesaling aspect of, you know, flipping contracts, and I said, I'm going to do this.
I got to tell you, so I'm listening to you, and I'm thinking to myself, this. The tactics that you employed here to get that first partner seem like a pretty damn good way to go for a new investor to really attach himself to a mentor almost, you know. So you find somebody who's, you know, been doing it for a while. You say, listen, you know, I'll hustle. I'll put the money out on the mailings. You know, I'll attract the leads. You know, can I shoot them through to you? You can help me evaluate them. And we could kind of run through the process. I mean, that's about as good as it gets, it sounds like to me.
Yeah, and it definitely is. And I do this in several different markets. And what I came to realize is that for some people, it's, you know, it's a good thing as far as the other investors on the other end. But I've found where I'll go into other markets and I'll say, hey, I'm going to bring the leads and I want you to evaluate them and go out there and look at the property. And guys would just be like, you know, I'm not going to pay you 50% for leads. You know, 50% of the assignment fee for leads. So, you know, if you can find that right person to work with, it's definitely going to be, you know, their golden ticket to more deals.
Yeah. Interesting. And that comes down or kind of back to that same thing that I always say, that it's better to have, you know, 50% of a deal than 100% of no deal. And a lot of people just don't understand that. So when you go to them and say, I want to, you know, partner up with you and get 50%, like, I think those people are stupid to not, you know, take you up on it. Because what are they missing out on, really?
Exactly.
All right. So, and you mentioned that you work in other markets. Does that mean that you are virtually wholesaling, or does that mean what are you doing?
Yeah, that means I'm virtually wholesaling, meaning that I'm doing the same thing that I did in Philadelphia with people in other markets.
Okay. And how does that work for those who don't understand virtual wholesaling? What does that even look like?
Okay. What virtual wholesaling is basically I'm doing all of the marketing. Like I told you guys about before. And I have to find, I like to call them, you know, my boots on the ground, my guides who are going to go out there, tell me what the value of the property is. And they're going to go out there, get it under contract, visit the properties and find buyers. So what I like to do is I like to find individuals like that in other markets, and then I'll work with them.
And how do you work with them? Are you always doing a 50-50 with them, or are you paying them a fee, or how does that work?
Yes, it's a 50-50 split of the assignment fee. So, you know, if the assignment fee was $5,000, they'll make $2,500, I'll make $2,500.
Okay. And how do you divvy up? I mean, you talked a little bit about that earlier, I know, but I'm just kind of rehashing it. But how do you divvy up roles exactly? Because I'm working with a partner a little bit right now. We're just kind of getting started with some wholesaling, I guess. And so I'm wondering, how do you define, I mean, who pays for what? Who is in charge of mailing? Like, how's that all look?
Yeah, and the way that we like to do it is I'm in charge of mailing. I handle all of mailing. I have an assistant who takes the call, sets appointments for them, and their main role is to get the property under contract, visit the property, and find a buyer. So we take the pre-screening, and they take everything after that.
Okay. And so do you pay 100% of the marketing fees then, the direct mail or whatever you're doing?
Yes.
Okay. All right, cool. And I definitely want to touch on your direct mail stuff. So why don't we go into that? I mean, we've talked about wholesaling before and flipping contracts on the podcast before, but I like to ask everyone kind of what your exact process is. So why don't we just go very basic from the beginning, how you do things? Maybe like start with marketing. How does that exactly work? You said postcards earlier.
Yeah. When I first got started, I used absentee postcards. And what I realized was that when I'll talk to a seller, they'll tell me, they'll say, hey, you know, I get a ton of these postcards, a ton of these yellow letters. And I said to myself, well, I don't want to be the, you know, second, third, fourth guy there. I want to be the first guy there. So that kind of led me to reaching out and trying to find other sources of leads. That's when I got into, back property taxes, code violations, evictions, probates. My favorite thing to do now is I have a guy who created a tool for me where I'll scrape the websites for people who owe property taxes. And then I'll take that list and then go and I'll scrape their addresses from public records. So that's my new source of leads right there is back property taxes. And I cut my marketing costs down by like at least 50% because these are targeted leads and, you know, not just the shotgun approach where I'm going after absentee owners.
Hey, so what markets are you in? Because I got a guy who's going to do that for me and I'll make you number two again.
Oh yeah. Hey, I guess I'm not the first. I want to be the first one. I'm not.
No, that's cool. That's clever. So you're finding these folks. You're sending them out now. Are you guys internally doing the mailings, or are you using a service to do that?
At one point, I used to like yellow letters, but like I said, I wanted to cut costs down. So, you know, I just send off postcards now. Once we pull the list, I'll have my assistant, she'll upload it to Click to Mail, and we're mailing off postcards twice a week.
Okay, so you use Click to Mail then?
Yes.
Okay, got it. All right, so you're sending these guys twice a week. Are you, when we talk about marketing, we've had a couple of discussions about this. I know a lot of folks say you need to hit somebody like 6-7 times before it makes sense. But you know, when you're talking with back taxes, I'm guessing you're probably trying to do some timing your mailings to when it's kind of getting close to the end for these owners. Is that right?
Yeah, well, for that particular lead source, yes. We like to hit them in the beginning of the year and then in the middle of the year. That's when in the beginning of the year, they'll get their tax bill. In the middle of the year, they will get, they'll get another tax bill because the areas we work in, they do it, biannually. Yep. Or they'll do it twice a year. So, that's when we like to hit them. Now I do evictions as well. I usually just hit them one time because they will, they'll go to court, we'll get their information. And then, it turns out well when we just hit them one time when they first, before they go to court, that works out well.
So you're sorry.
Oh, I think we were going to ask the same question.
Oh, wait.
The landlord?
Yeah. Is that what you mean? You're hitting landlords for eviction stuff?
Exactly. Yes.
That's a great idea.
That is a good idea. Find tired landlords, folks who are tired of dealing with evictions.
Because I know, last month when I was dealing with my eviction, I mean, if I would have gotten a letter, like I would have seriously considered it because you get really emotional.
And that's how my grandmother, she actually, that's why she decided to sell her property was because the tenant gave her a problem. She couldn't collect money from them. And she just was saying, hey, get rid of it.
That's awesome. I mean, I'm going to totally do that. So
good tip.
I love tips like that. That's
quick
awesome.
Quick tip.
Great.
That was awesome.
All right. So you want to take it, Josh?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Back to the marketing. All right. So did you completely then disband the other tactics that where you were number two? Did you say, listen, I'm not going to deal with this. I don't even want to compete with these guys. I'm going to look for market, I'm going to focus on marketing on things that there's definitely not a lot of competition? Or are you still marketing, but you've kind of tweaked it up a bit?
Well, I deal with a lot of investors here in Richmond, and this is not my main market. I rarely do deals. So, a couple of close friends here, they are looking for properties. And they're saying, Mike, why aren't you doing anything in Richmond? So just recently, this past week, I sent off an absentee mailer. That's the first time I mailed to absentees in about, it's been probably a little over a year maybe. So, absentees are definitely great sources because it's people who don't own the property that, they don't live in the property that they own. So I like absentees. I would not tell anybody not to, not to mail them. Definitely mail them. They're good leads.
Gotcha. Folks who are probably listening to the show, since this is primarily a wholesaling show, who knows? Maybe I think we're going to have quite a few newer investors. And I was hoping we could take just 5-7 minutes or so to kind of go start to finish, right?
Okay.
Hey, I want to be a wholesaler. I'm going to do my first deal. What do I do? Step one, step two, step three. Walk me through the process really quickly.
All right. So beginning wholesalers, if they're saying, this sounds interesting, this is something that I want to do, what I recommend them do is to go out there and get in their car, drive around their neighborhoods, and look for properties where the grass is tall, it looks like it may be vacant, no one lives there. That's a good place to start. And what you want to do after that is you want to contact these people. And the way that you can contact them is you can go into the county website, and it'll tell you the address of the property and the mailing address of where they send the tax information. Now, if that address where they send the tax information is different from the property address, that's usually a good sign, meaning that they don't live in that property. Okay. If the address is the same, that doesn't necessarily mean, walk away from it. You may still be able to get that property, lock that property up. But what you want to do next is what I like to do is I like to look in Yellow Pages, or I have a service that I use called Accurate, which is what private investigators use. I use that to find a phone number of the person that lives in that property or that is associated with that property. Okay. And after you do that, ask them if they're interested in selling their property. If they are interested in selling, what you're going to then do.
Well, can I stop you really quick? So you said it was called Accurate. Accurent?
Yes. Accurate by LexisNexis.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Yeah. It's a service that lets you do, find information, public and private information on individuals.
Gotcha. Okay. So, and we could hopefully link to that in the show notes at biggerpockets.com/show42. And so I want to know about contacting these folks. You get the phone number and you say, all right, I'm going to call this guy. Well, what exactly, you said you just tell them that, you find out if they're interested in selling the house, but is that it? I mean, I'm sure there's more to the picture than just that, right?
Yeah. And most of the times when you find these type of properties, you're not going to be able to contact the individual at first. It's going to be hard. So what I do is I like to snoop around. I'll get the neighbor's phone number, the person across the street. I'll get a relative's phone number. And the way that you can get the relative's information is because the service I use, Accurate, it gives you that information on these people. And I'll just simply call them up. I'll say, hey, can you help me? I'm looking for the person that owns this home. Most of the time, probably 80%, 80% of the time, I'll be able to get a phone number out of these individuals. And then once I get the actual homeowner or the decision maker on the phone, then I will, talk to them. I'll say, hey, I was driving around the neighborhood, came across this property. Doesn't look like anybody lives there. What's your plans with the property? Are you planning on living there? Is it vacant? You thinking about selling it? After that, I get a feel for what they're doing with it. And I'll say, hey, listen, I'm a cash buyer. I would be interested in purchasing your property. If you're interested in selling, I'd like to come out there and take a look at the property. At that point, they may say, hey, yes, we I'm interested in doing that. You can come and take a look at the property. From there, I'll say, hey, well, what I want to do is I will get a estimate as to what we may be able to pay for the property so that we don't waste your time. and I'll call you back with an estimate and let you know what I will be interested in paying for the property so that I don't waste my time going out there if they're thinking they want $100,000 for the property and I'm around $20,000. Yeah. So, you know, to get my estimate, what I'll do is I'll look at the recent cash sales in the area. I don't like to do the ARV minus repairs, you know, all of that. I like to go after what investors are willing to pay for properties. And I'll look at the sales from the last 6 months, absentee owned properties, meaning that the person who bought the property doesn't live in it. Okay. And then I will, you know, see what they paid for similar properties that are like the one that I'm, you know, interested in.
And so, and where do you find that? Where do you find that information on the cash buyers sales?
That's in MLS. Now, if for people who don't have MLS, what I like to do is, and I actually use this site right now. It's Zillow. Zillow is, it works wonders for me in my local market. In some other markets, it doesn't work at all. But in my local market, what I like to do is I'll look at the recent sales. So the properties that are in good shape, renovated properties, I'll look at them, and then I'll look at properties that have sold recently in that area within the last 6 months that have sold for less than what that renovated property sold for. So I'm going to assume that that property, okay, the ones that are selling for less are investors just purchasing those properties. It may not always be the case, but it's a good number to go by. And I'll give them a range that is between what I want to purchase the property for and what that other property sold for. Okay. And then that's when I'll say, hey, I'll be able to pay between, you know, let's say 30 and 40,000 for this property. And depending on the condition, if you're interested, we can go ahead and schedule an appointment. If not, you know, we can go our separate ways and I put them on follow up.
Got it.
Okay. I love this idea that you're talking about. I don't think we've anybody talk about it quite like that. You say for beginners to start out with driving for dollars, essentially. And yes, the reason why I like that so much is because a lot of people recommend just go out and start direct mailing. Just go out and start mailing. But you can waste thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars on direct mail if you don't know how to close a deal or how to negotiate. And so, exactly. Yeah, by doing it on a small scale and perfecting your skills, once you've got that down, then you can translate that and scale it upward.
Definitely.
I love that.
And you'll be able to practice talking to actual sellers on the phone as well.
Yeah, before you're dropping thousands of dollars. So, yeah.
And I think that's somewhere where these guys are, new investors in particular, are fearful, right? It's scary to get on the phone and talk to somebody the first time.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I still remember Danny Johnson on the podcast we did with him. He said the first time his phone rang, he took the phone and threw it across the room at his wife. Yeah. I'm sure I did the same thing or something similar.
All right.
So cool.
All right. So we got a deal. We got this guy. We say 35-40K. He says, yes, let's, you know, that could work. Now what?
All right. Now we'll go out to the property. We'll take a look at it. The only way that that'll change is if the property is a complete shell, that number will change, or if the property is in better shape than what we, you know, first imagined, we'll go up maybe a little bit. But after that, we'll tell the seller, we'll say, hey, we'll give them our final offer. Our final offer, if they accept it, we'll then get the contract signed. Once the contract is signed, we now have equitable interest in the property, so we can go out there and market it as if it's our own. At that point, we will then go out there, market the property. And I'm telling you guys how to do it as if you're doing it in your own market. You know, as I said earlier, I do a lot of virtual wholesaling, so other people find the buyers. But you go out there, you market the property on Craigslist, bandit signs. You can send postcards out to recent buyers in the area within the past 6 months. And once someone tells you that they're interested in the price that you mark it up as, so if you get under contract for $30,000 and you mark it up to $40,000, if somebody's interested in it at $40,000, then what you'll do is you'll say, okay, you're interested in this property, give us a deposit for $1,000, we'll put it in escrow at the title company, okay? And then what we'll do is we'll sign what you call an assignment contract. We'll sign this assignment contract, okay? They'll purchase the property from me for $40,000 for my position in the contract that I have with the seller, okay, which the original contract is $30,000, In order to take my position, they'll pay me $10,000, which is the assignment fee. Okay.
And do you get that? Do you get that at closing, or do you get that right then when you assign it?
It's possible to get it right then, but I haven't done it that way. You can get that at closing. Okay. Most people get it at closing. So what you're going to do is you're going to take those two contracts, the original contract with the seller, the assignment contract with the buyer. You take that, you take it to a title company or closing attorney, and they will run title to make sure that the property is clear of any, to make sure that the owner is the owner who they say they are, and make sure that it was properly transferred in the past. After that, usually title takes about, depending on what area you're in, I see it take upwards of 2 weeks, 3 weeks. It will take about between 1 and 2 weeks for them to run title. After that, they'll say it's clear. Schedule the closing between the seller and the buyer. And then what will happen is the seller will come in there, sign the paperwork. They'll get their check. Buyer will come in. They will sign their paperwork. They'll wire the funds in. They'll get the property. And then the title company, they'll call you up within, you know, maybe a day or a couple hours and say your check is ready, and you get paid.
Cool. All right. Well, and just a reminder for everyone out there, if that was confusing to people, if it's your first time hearing this whole concept, you know, definitely hit the rewind button and listen again, because that was brilliant right there. I mean, that was wholesaling in a nutshell. That was great.
So I've got a couple questions that come up. You're talking with that initial seller. Are you telling them that you're not the end buyer?
What I usually tell them is that either myself or a partner will purchase this property. And that doesn't, you know, make it seem as if you're actually trying to get over on them. You're not telling the truth. So, you know, I'll say myself or a partner.
Gotcha. Okay. And have you ever had that turn sour and everything just say, you know, the seller get angry or just kind of lose a deal over something like that?
No, I've never had an issue with that.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Money's money to them, huh?
Yeah. And what about a situation where, you know, you don't find the buyer in time? So that, you know, I think that's the biggest fear from new wholesalers, other than obviously getting on the phone with people, which I said earlier was the biggest fear. But, you know, what if you can't find somebody? Then what? You know, how does that work?
Now, one thing you want to make sure you do before you even consider this is make sure you have the right contract that has an out clause for you. Because without an out clause, then you could possibly be sued. So if I do not find if I have a 30-day contract, if I don't find a buyer within 15 days, I will then let the seller know, hey, we may need a discount or a continuance on this property. Okay. If I feel as though there's not a lot of buyers biting on it, then within at least five to 10 days before it's actually supposed to close, or before the contract ends, I'll send them a letter stating that, hey, you know, we can't purchase this property due to whatever clause you have in the contract, due to my partner not approving, or due to not being able to, you know, receive financing for this property or whatnot.
Gotcha. And obviously, presumably, you get your lawyer to draft up a good contract for you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or get them to review a contract that you have.
Yeah, that would be cheaper, I suppose.
There you go.
Do you have a minimum wholesale fee like that you will do a deal for?
If it's locally here, I want to at least make $5,000. And some other markets, some deals it'll be $2,000, some deals it'll be $10,000. So I would say no, I don't have a minimum, but I would say make sure you make at least $5,000 on a deal. There may be some deals where you'll come across where you just want to help out that seller, and you may get by making about $2,500, $2,000. And, you know, I'll say, hey, do those. You know, like you said earlier, it's better to make, you know, some money than no money.
Yep.
And what's the most you've ever made on a wholesale?
The most I've made was $56,000.
So you made $56,000, and there was still room in there for the buyer to rehab and make his profit too.
Yes.
Wow. Can you tell us about that deal?
It was a virtual wholesale deal. It was in a market. It was a commercial property. I had no idea what I was doing. It was actually more than that made. Another investor, a wholesaler, he put the deal together. He made the numbers work out. He found a buyer for it. Took about 4 months, but we made it work.
Wow.
And where did you find the commercial property?
It was actually, I sent it off to the list that I pull for evictions. There's no telling if it's I don't usually know if it's a residential property or a commercial property. So he was processing an eviction. And, he called us. He said, okay, I have this, 34 unit. I want to get rid of it. And I told my guy, he said, I know somebody that can help us out with it. Let's go ahead and see if we can make it happen.
That's nice. Really, really cool. I'm totally doing that now. All right. So that's cool. So
you're going to have Brandon calling you.
I know
by
I'm
going to
be calling you as I
Hey,
as
Mike, I want to talk to these eviction guys. Now what?
So how did you find a guy to buy that property in that area? Like, obviously you had to find somebody, a cash buyer that could close on a 34 unit.
The way, like I told you, I didn't know anything about commercial properties. My partner on the ground, he got with someone in the area that knew commercial properties and he worked it through them.
That's cool. And that's just another benefit of partnerships is
exactly
where you're lacking
have somebody,
somebody else
more expertise than you.
Yeah. And you had mentioned Craigslist earlier. What other and the signs and things like that? Are there any other great tactics for finding your buyers, or you really find the bulk of your buyers? Well, you're not doing even that work, right? It's usually your partner.
Yes, it's usually my partner. But actually, I'm getting ready to go to an auction here now in Richmond. And the reason why I'm going is because I want to see, I want to meet guys, network and see, because if you go to an auction, those are cash buyers. Those are people buying properties, interested in properties. Talk to them, hand out your cards and, see what they're looking to buy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Travis Daggett, I think, said that in his podcast, too. And I love that tip. So,
yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, What about your tips for building rapport with sellers? Because, obviously you're hitting people up who are at a challenging point in their lives. What do you do besides being a nice guy?
Pretty much ask them, how can you help them? Try to solve their problem. Try to find out what's really, getting to them. Like, a friend of mine, what he said was, he told me, sellers have a headache. They have this headache. It's a throbbing headache, and you want to be their Advil. You want to be their medicine. You want to, fix their headache. So that's all you have to do, really, to build up that good rapport with them.
That's nice. Cool. That's
hopefully cool. We can get Bayer to sponsor the Bigger Pockets podcast. Bigger Pockets, the world of headache solvers.
Yes, there you go.
Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes to help you see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes you like, so you can find a home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours even on the same day with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to help you get the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today. We're always looking for ways to improve, searching for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for better is by matching with quality candidates. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BiggerPockets. Just go to Indeed.com/BiggerPockets right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Indeed.com/biggerpockets. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Listen up, business owners, because I've got some quick little math for you. Fewer costs equal more profit. The problem? You're spending more than ever on operations, materials, deliveries, software, and more. So why not reduce your costs and headaches with NetSuite by Oracle? NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. Oh, also, NetSuite lives in the cloud, which means you can reduce IT costs with no hardware required. Cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because now you've got one unified business management suite. You can improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. It makes sense that over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. So don't let rising costs sink your business growth. And by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/biggerpockets. 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 This show is sponsored by Airbnb. Did you know that a long time ago, before I ever started my real estate business, I turned one of my first primary residences into an Airbnb? And that's the extra income that I needed from Airbnb that gave me the confidence to go out and work for myself and eventually quit my 9-to-5 job. And now I have dozens of Airbnbs all over the country. I've even partnered up with the old David Green on a recent property in Scottsdale to take our portfolio to the next level. And of course, we host it on Airbnb. But you don't need to be a full-time real estate investor to start on Airbnb. As a matter of fact, I was self-managing 10 properties while working my 9-to-5 job, so I know anybody can do it. Think about it this way. You're looking for extra income and going on a vacation. Wouldn't it be great to rent out your space and let your property pay for itself while you're gone? I did this one time. I pitched my wife and my roommate, because we were house hacking, on the idea of renting out our home, and it paid for all of our expenses on a trip to Mexico City. So go and give it a try. It might just change your life, just like it did mine. And I really do mean that. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So yeah. I have a question for you. Then we talked earlier about your best deal you've ever done. Do you have any terrible mistakes or really bad deals other than that first one? Like, have you had any major problems since then?
I thought I was grinding it in, Brandon. You're going to make him feel bad. I mean, like, because you made a really big mistake back then. By the way, I feel kind of bad because I felt like I was digging in on you earlier, but my goal was to not dig on you, but to, you know, make others understand what's happening.
My biggest mistake was a property here in my local market. I got greedy and I got the property at a super deep discount. I believe it was around $13,000. Okay. And I had a buyer. I took him. He's a good friend of mine. He went over to the property with me, and he looked at it and he said, "Okay, I'll pay you." I think it was maybe $16,000 for the property, or I know it was less than $5,000 because that's I went back. What I did, my mistake was I went back to the seller and I said, "Hey, can we take off maybe $1,000 or $2,000 because I wanted to make it $5,000 even." So she said, "No, I'm not coming down on the price." And what ended up happening was she ended up not answering any of my phone calls after that. Oh. And she went out there and she found somebody to list her property for $46,000 and it sold.
Oh,
interesting.
And that was my biggest mistake. After that, I never renegotiate price anymore. Unless it's necessary, I need to, if I can't find a buyer, not just out of, saying, "Hey, I want to make this amount of money on a property."
Now, did you have a contract with her, prior to this or?
A valid contract. I had a valid contract. And that's another mistake that I didn't do. I did not record the contract, or I tried to record the contract, but I did not get, I'm going blank right now.
Notarized?
Notarized. I didn't get it notarized, so my county would not let me record the contract.
Okay. Interesting. So you didn't have a valid contract because it wasn't notarized, or well, it was valid. It just wasn't. You had.
It was a valid contract. Yeah, yeah. It just wasn't valid to the city.
Yeah. So your recourse was limited.
On it.
Yeah.
Cool. Wow. Well, let's move on to one kind of last section before we begin to wind things down. And that is something you talk about a little bit on your own site, is using virtual assistants in your business. So can you kind of explain to people what that is?
Okay. A virtual assistant, or for short, a VA, is basically someone who works from home, or they're, you know, they're in a different location from you, and they do whatever you want them to do. The way that I use my virtual assistants in my business now is I use them to answer the phones for me. Well, actually, I use them to return phone calls for me. So they'll talk to sellers. They will build up that good rapport with them. They'll take their information down. They will send my leads off to my assistants on the ground, my boots on the ground. They will wait for them to get back to them with how much we can pay for the property. And then what they'll do is they'll call the sellers back, make that offer, and then set appointments up. Yeah, so that's how I use my virtual assistants.
Now, where do you find these guys?
They are located in the Philippines. I find them on a website, odesk.com.
Gotcha.
I go out there, I hire them, bring them on, send them my training, and bring them on board.
And what do you pay a Filipino virtual assistant?
Well, I started off paying them $3 an hour, and that's actually a good rate for someone in the Philippines. My assistant, they've been doing a great job for me. One of my assistants, she's done a great job for me. I pay her strictly on commission now.
Gotcha. Interesting. And how's the English? I mean, I know most people go to the Philippines because, you know, English is a primary language there, but is there any confusion, or is it straight, you know, you feel like you're talking to somebody in the Philippines?
No, it's their English is great. Some people, they think about the big, large companies when you call and you get somebody on the phone, you can't understand them.
Right, right.
And I don't know where they hire their folks, but they need to hire them on Odesk because their English is great.
Nice. Oh,
That's good. Do they work then? Because you're on, like, I think it's like, what, a 15-hour difference or something like that. So is there, is that what it is? Something 13. Like that. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's 13 hours.
Okay, yeah. So how does that work for day and night? Do they work overnight then on their time?
Yes, they work overnight. The way that my assistants work is they don't answer the phones for me anymore. I have a call service who answers the phones for me. And then they will, I have it set up where it's a Google form. They'll type the information in. It'll go into an Excel spreadsheet. My assistant will then get all of the information and forward it over to our partners on the ground. But the way that they work is they used to work from 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. and then from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. because what we realize is that they can catch the people in the morning before they go to work, or they can catch them in the evening when they come home. So that's worked out great for us. So.
Okay. And how do you make sure your virtual assistant is actually working? I had a virtual assistant that I hired that she said she was working 40 hours a week and she maybe did 2 hours a week. So I fired her and got a new guy, which he's doing better, but
still probably not working 40 hours a week. Yeah. Yeah.
How do you,
well, the way that I like to do that is I put a lot of trust in people. And one of my assistants, she's one of the best assistants that I have. She's worked with me in far as hiring other virtual assistants. And she said that the reason why she wanted to work with me and she liked working with me is because I trust her. And I gave her, I didn't track her time. I didn't go out there and put her on one of those tracking softwares. And I was open with her and I communicated. So the way that she put it was, I love working for you. You know, you're not always on my back about things. You let me be flexible. And, you know, that's what they want. They want someone that's flexible. And I don't keep track of their time. I can tell by how much work they're putting in and the output to say, okay, you know, if my assistant is working 30 hours a week and I'm paying her for 40, if she's doing a good job, I'm okay with that.
Okay. So then last question I have about that. If somebody wants to go get a VA, and they want to use Odesk, do they go on there and search for somebody's profile, or do they go put a posting on? Like, what? How should somebody start that process today?
The way that I like to do it is I like to do both. You can go out there, you can put up a job posting, but then also what I like to do is I like to search for assistants that have experience. Someone they told me, they said, make sure you find someone that has experience. And that was the best. It may seem simple, but that was the best advice that I received, because once I went out there and started looking for people with experience, then, you know, my whole outlook on hiring virtual assistants just changed. Because when you bring someone on your team that has experience with call centers, then you don't have to train them as much.
Yeah, that's cool. That's very cool. All right. Well, why don't we move on to the fire round?
Fire round.
It's time for the fire round.
All right. All right. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll try not to burn you here. All right. Well, I actually had six questions for the fire round, but you answered two of them already in the process of this. So we only have four questions for the fire round. Number one, these all come from the forums directly. These are questions that people have asked recently, and these all came from the wholesaling forum. So number one, how do you deal with angry people when they call you?
It's a good question. I don't actually talk to them anymore. The way that we used to deal with it is we used to just have them leave voicemail messages, and I'll just save them and listen to them at a later date because they were so funny. So we just don't call them back.
Okay, well, that works.
Gotcha. Hey, well, all right.
Speaking of that, then real quick, I was going to ask this earlier and I forgot. So when your virtual assistants call those people back, at what point do you personally or your partner actually get on the phone with them? Is that never?
I never talk to sellers anymore. The only time that my partners will talk to sellers is if when they go out and look at the property. And even then, my partners on the ground, they don't make the offers. My assistants, when they get back and give us the information, they make the offers.
Okay, so your assistants are doing some kind of market research to see the price that they can offer.
No, they're getting the price that they can offer from my partners on the ground.
Okay, I see. Okay, cool. All right, moving on.
The person who actually physically signs the contract with the seller is who then?
Whom? That will be my partner on the ground.
That would be your partner. Is it who or whom?
I don't know. Who or whom?
That's one of them.
All right, anyway, next question, fire round.
All right. And I think we kind of covered this, but how do you frame up wholesaling to the seller?
I don't. Yeah. We just tell them that we're purchasing the property.
Yep.
Okay, yeah, with the partner. And I like that when you said about that either me or my partner will do it. I really like that a lot because it's not being dishonest at all. It makes them feel comfortable. I think it's cool. So, all right, next one. Billboards. Have you used them? Should you use them?
No, I have not used them. Should you use them? It depends on your market. You could use them and have great success. I see a lot of We Buy Houses signs out there. Some of the big... The big wholesaling companies, I guess you can say, I see them have signs up, and if they continue to stay up, I guess they do work.
Yeah. There's a billboard in my town that you can rent, and it said, I looked into it, it's $250 a month for me to rent this big billboard. Now, granted, I have to pay for the thing, but I thought $250 a month for, like, I don't know. I mean, my area is really cheap. Yeah, that's really cheap.
Brandon's just going to rent it out and put a picture of him with his cats on it.
I have thought about that, honestly. There's a big picture of me up there. Says like, hey, have a good day. All right, next one. Josh, you want to finish it up?
Oh, boy, that's funny. How important are business cards?
Business cards are very important. I realize that when I go out to networking events and I don't have a business card, I'm inconveniencing the other individual by saying, hey, can I get your number put into my phone? And they want to go out there and meet other individuals as well. So business cards are very important. I say you should always have some on you.
That's a great suggestion. I mean, I don't carry them with me because I'm usually not, like, unless I'm going to a networking event. But you're right. If it inconveniences people to have to sit there and program into a cell phone.
Here's a tip. Take like three or four cards and put them in your wallet and always have them in your wallet. I mean, that's just the way to do it. And that way, you know, as you start to get low, you go and you refill it. But I personally think there's no excuse for not having a card at any point in time. I mean, I could see going to an event and running out, but you're definitely inconveniencing the other person. And I think part of it's saying, you know what, I don't think you're important enough to give your information to, right? I mean, it's like, hey, sure. I'm better than, maybe it's like, I'm better than you and I'll reach out to you if I care to, versus having it be kind of a mutual relationship.
Exactly.
Yeah, wise. All right, so final session of our little podcast here is the Famous Four.
Famous Four.
All right, and we asked these
questions. We've lost the enthusiasm.
We've completely lost the enthusiasm. All right, well, no more Famous Four. All right, what is your favorite real estate book?
Has to be Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Yeah, good choice.
That was a tough one, right?
I thought that might be it.
All right. And your favorite non-real estate book, and I'm guessing it's 4-Hour Work Week.
You know what? That in the E-Myth.
Oh, man.
Both good choices.
Yeah, they're great. Yeah,
Hey, Josh, what page number are you on this week?
I'm still on 27, Brandon.
Good job.
I believe I was on 27 on show 40 and perhaps on show 39 as well.
Yeah, you may have been. You know, we'll keep bugging you.
Yeah.
I've been bugging you to read Lean Startup now. I told you to put the 4-Hour Work Week down. We're 4-Hour Work Week down for a little bit and read Lean Startup instead. But, you know.
Yeah, we'll see what's good. All right, hobbies. What kind of stuff do you do for fun outside of real estate?
I love CrossFit. I'm a big CrossFitter. Really? Yeah, I love working out. CrossFit is I love it. I'm what you call a picker. I like to find stuff at local flea markets and sell it on eBay.
Really?
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of my guilty pleasures is that pick and show. I forget what it's called, but it seems like it could be fun. But maybe one day when I retire.
Yeah, maybe one day.
Yeah, it's a hobby.
All right, final question: what do you believe sets apart the investors who succeed from those who do not?
Just a firm belief in themselves. You just have to, you know, tell yourself that you can do it and just be your biggest fan and go out there and make things work.
Cool.
Yeah, that's good, great. Answer.
Yeah.
Very, very good advice. All right, Mike. Well, listen, I think we certainly covered a lot in a short bit of time here. Where can people find out about you?
Well, if you guys would like to find out more about me and learn about the techniques that I use in wholesaling, you can visit my blog, which is wholesalinghouses101.com.
Cool.
And you do have some really good videos on there, so I do encourage people to check the videos out.
Nice. Yeah. And you're also on Bigger Pockets, of course.
Yes, of course. I'm on Bigger Pockets as well.
Right on.
And we do appreciate you. You're always jumping into those wholesaling forum threads, so we do appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Cool. Appreciate it. Well, listen, this is show 42 of the Bigger Pockets podcast. You can find the show notes at biggerpockets.com/show42. And Mike, we definitely appreciate having you on the show, and we'll look forward to seeing you around.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Yep. Thank you, Mike.
All right, everybody. That was Mike Nelson. Really cool show. Lots of great stuff for those of you who are interested in the topic of wholesaling.
Like me.
Yeah, and there's tips in there for everybody also. So if you're not a wholesaler, hopefully you got some value. Anyway, we definitely appreciate Mike's time, and hopefully you enjoyed it. Make sure you ask Mike any questions you've got for him on the show notes at biggerpockets.com/show42. Find him on his profile. We'll have a link to that on the show notes. And come connect with us on the usual networks. Of course, the most usual one being
Facebook.
Bigger Pockets.
Oh.
You're fired. How many times have you been fired?
Way too many times.
You hurt my feelings.
Moving on.
Now I'm going to cry.
Won't be the first time. Won't be the last.
Far from the last. Yeah, so connect with us on Bigger Pockets and come hang out, do some reading, share your thoughts. If you're just a browser, if you're just somebody who doesn't engage, you're missing out. Jump in and hang out. But yeah, then again, hang out on Facebook and everywhere else and come play with us there too. But I don't know. I think that's all I have to say for today. Brandon, do you have anything?
I got nothing.
Clearly you don't have anything to say, so I'm just
speechless.
Gonna go on. What? I'm sorry. Did you say so?
I'm speechless.
You're never at a loss for words.
I am at a loss for words.
Time to go. Well, I'm Josh Dorkin, signing off.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
That's a wrap.
There's a reason small multifamily investing is so popular in the Bigger Pockets community. With just a 3.5% down payment, you can own up to 4 different units. Think about it. If you house hack and live in one of the units, you still have 3 different groups of tenants helping you pay down your mortgage every month. 4 kitchens and bathrooms you could renovate to increase your property value. 4 different Airbnbs, medium-term rentals, or other rental strategies that you can try in one property, all in just one transaction. Of course, the question is, where do you find a small multifamily property that you can actually afford? Which market and which deals are best for you? Once you close, how do you manage it, optimize it, keep scaling, and living your life without being tied down to four leaky toilets or four fussy tenants? All great questions, my friends. All to be answered in the upcoming Small Multifamily Bootcamp with Chris Lopez and Leka Devatha. So if you're serious about growing your portfolio with this highly efficient strategy, head to biggerpockets.com/four, F-O-U-R, today and join us in the Small Multifamily Bootcamp. See you there.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all hosts and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.